And the second one is to discuss the updated plan for RFC 477. So do you want to wait or should we get going? Well, go ahead and tell me your brothers.
Let's go.
All right, let's go. Have you all seen the minutes of the January meeting that were distributed? I need a motion to approve those, or if you've got corrections or adjustments, let's discuss that.
Motion to approve, Lisa Pollock.
Thank you, Lisa. Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Anybody have any discussion items about that, or should we vote?
Second, Kathleen. I didn't catch the second. Who made it?
Tarbert there. Okay, let's go ahead. All in favor of approving the minute, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the minutes are approved. Tony and Kathy, can I suggest that you go ahead and start to discuss the RF 2477 plan for this year?
Sure. Do you want me to go ahead, Kathy?
Yes, go ahead, Tony. I was on mute, sorry.
Okay. What you've received is the updated draft of the RS 2477 annual plan, and it contains much the same language as we've had in the plan for the last several years, with a couple of notable differences that I want to talk about today. The first deals with the preservation depositions that we've been doing for now 6 or 7 years. And to date, we've done approximately 660 preservation depositions. And we were scheduled to be taking depositions at the present time, but because of the coronavirus, we postponed the block that we were in, and we're going to start those depositions again at a point in time where we feel confident about the safety of the participants. Because of the nature of these depositions, which involves in-person interviews, they involve driving the roads in vehicles, and they involve in-person depositions, none of those activities, we believe, is safe at this time. And so what we need to do is just wait until there is safety, and that we can be assured in the witness's safety as well as our own safety. We're not going to start them up again until we reach that point, which may mean waiting, in fact, until we have a vaccine. But we definitely will start those up again, because in the trial that we've just concluded, and that's what I'm going to talk about next, in the Bellwether trial, we submitted approximately 60 depositions. That is, about 30 witnesses appeared live, and about 60 witnesses appeared through depositions. So that gives you an indication of how important these preservation depositions are. And so we need to start them up again, and we need to continue to work closely with county commissions to seek assistance in generating witness lists that we can use in terms of identifying viable witnesses. The virus has affected us in that respect, certainly. Other than that, though, I don't think the virus has caused us that many problems. I've been very pleased with the way both the public land section of the AG's office and PLIPCO itself, how everyone has responded to the working from home situation. I don't really think we've missed a beat. So let me turn then again to what is the most critical difference in the RS-2477 plan as opposed to earlier iterations of it. Everybody has been anxious to have this Bellwether trial completed, and we're right in the middle of it still. The trial date was pushed back two or three times, one time by the government's closure, one time by SUA's motion to intervene. In any event, we finally did start trial and complete trial in February. The trial went for three full weeks. There were approximately 45 witnesses called live by the United States, Kane County, and by the state of Utah. All in all, I felt very, very good about our presentation of the cases for all 15 of these roads, and I do mean all 15 of these roads. There were a couple of roads that we were very skeptical about going in. We worried about the sufficiency of our evidence. One in particular is a road, a short road, that was used primarily for hunting. It goes into a wilderness study area. It's the road, one of the roads that was selected by SUA. And I believe that even that road is viable. So after the conclusion of the Bellwether trial, the court set up a post-trial schedule for the items that remain to be done. And we're right now in the middle of all of that. The first large project we have for the court is the submission of findings of fact and conclusions of law. We will submit, that is, the Kane County and the state of Utah will jointly submit our proposed findings and conclusions. The United States can then file their proposed findings and conclusions, and in the state and the county will have an opportunity to respond to the differences between the state plan and the United States findings of, and conclusions. Right now, the preparation of these findings and conclusions have been a much bigger job than we thought it was going to be. Given the number of witnesses involved, given the complexity of the issues involved, and the number of legal questions that are involved, right now our draft of the findings and conclusions exceeds 400 pages. And that's a pretty concise document in terms of how we've tried to eliminate any excess verbiage. So that 400 pages is absolutely jammed full of factual detail that has been culled, and what remains is the hard evidence. We knew it was going to be a big job. We didn't know it was going to be this big a job. With the combination of the number of witnesses that testified at trial, with the additional witnesses that testified through depositions, it's just a huge, huge project, a huge task to do. Those findings and conclusions, our proposed findings will be submitted a week from Friday. And as I said, the United States will then have an opportunity to submit theirs. The other things that are ongoing, shortly after we submit, about a month after, I guess, that we submit the findings and conclusions, we'll have an opportunity to submit a post-trial brief where we'll address both the findings of fact as well as the conclusions of law. That date's been pushed back two or three times as well. There will actually be two different documents that will be filed. The question of jurisdiction will be submitted separately than the question on the substantive merits of the case. So the United States has made a motion to dismiss, raising jurisdictional issues. That will be fully briefed and argued separately than the briefing and the argument of the substantive issues. So we'll have, we'll brief those two aspects of the case separately. So that's, I don't think that all of this information, both the findings and conclusions and the trial briefs and the motions to dismiss, I don't think any of that will be submitted to Judge Waddups before quite close to the end of this calendar year. So it's been a big job and continues to be a big job. And it's further complicated by one other aspect, and that is that if you recall the Kane County, the Ball Dole case that was tried back in 2011 involving another 15 roads in Kane County, that case was sent back to Judge Waddups with respect to three of the roads that had been awarded to the state and to Kane County for the purpose of determining the width of the rights of way for those three roads. That's the only issue that has gone back to Judge Waddups. In that other case, Sue filed its fourth motion to intervene. And that fourth motion to intervene was granted by the Tenth Circuit. There was a panel of three judges that ruled in a 2-1 decision that SUA has standing as a right to intervene in that case that deals with the width of those three roads. We filed a petition for reconsideration, and that petition for reconsideration was denied by the Tenth Circuit in an evenly split Tenth Circuit panel, because if that occurs, if the court is actually is evenly split, then the earlier ruling is upheld. So what we have then is a ruling that SUA has the right to intervene at least on the question of scope or width of these three roads in that Kane County lawsuit. Now, SUA has also filed a motion to intervene into the Bellwether case. They have moved to intervene as of right, not only with respect to the question of the width of these 15 roads, but with respect to all other issues. That motion to intervene is in the process of being briefed. We only have one more brief to be filed by SUA, and then the court will entertain argument on SUA's motion to intervene. If SUA is granted the right to intervene with respect to all issues, Sua will file a motion for a new trial. And if that motion is successful, obviously, we would have to go back and retry the entire case. I frankly don't think that that will happen. My best guess is that Judge Waters will allow Sua to intervene only on the question of scope, and that the trial will stand, and we may have to have two or three more days of evidence on the question of scope. I just don't know. But that throws another wrench in the works. So things remain complicated. Things remain very much up in the air. And it doesn't appear that we're going to get final resolution on these questions that are before the court in this Bellwether case for some months yet. That's where we stand, and that's spelled out in some detail in this new plan. It doesn't go into all of that detail, but much of what I've just said is in the plan. Now, does anyone have any questions about anything I've discussed? And Brian Steed, I want to assure you that we're not going to be tossed out of court on all these roads for jurisdictional reasons. If you remember our meeting in Washington, you do. Okay.
Did the Lieutenant Governor join us?
I'm here, Kathy.
Welcome. We've gone ahead with the agenda, Governor, and just had this presentation of the RS 2477. It's open for discussion, and I'm happy to pass the baton to you. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, and Tony, thank you for the update. I think my head just exploded again. It never ends with these guys, but I'm really proud of the work that you and your team are doing. I know it's as complicated as any complex situation I've seen, and you're doing a tremendous job there. Are there any questions or discussion for Tony?
One question, regarding Tony, there was a recent denial of Sua's petition to intervene. The court was quite, closer to harsh than further from being patient with them. How does that play into their motions currently?
Well, It does. It does in this respect, Representative Stratton. The court, on its own, prior to the Bellwether case, prior to the trial, the court on its own further limited Sua's participation in the trial. And the court did that based upon the actions that had taken place, or that Sua had committed over the last several years in that court. He basically said that, in his opinion, Sua was trying to interfere with or obstruct the process, that Sua's participation was therefore not helpful, and on its own, the court ruled that Sua only participate at trial through the United States. Sua did sit through the court proceedings. They were at the table, but they could not directly participate in the trial itself. Now, the question is, how does that all fit into what the court's going to have to consider now on Sua's new motion to intervene? We argue in our response that, one, if we recognize that SUA has the right to intervene on the question of scope, on the question of the width of roads. We argue that that is the extent of the right of intervention, because that's basically what the Tenth Circuit ruled in the Kane County 1 case. But we further argue that even with respect to the question of scope, that because of SUA's prior actions in this litigation, they should be once again limited in terms of how they can actually participate on those questions of scope. So we believe, Representative Stratton, that the court has not forgotten its prior ruling. The court has not forgotten SUA's record in this case in terms of obstructing the proceedings, and that it could very possibly have a bearing upon his decision on the motion to intervene.
Thank you, Governor. That answers my question.
All right, thank you. And again, Tony, thank you for your great work and your help on this. I believe that we are then on to the last item on the agenda, and Commissioner Pollack.
This is Representative Lyman. I had just one more quick question, possibly for I think Brian Steed probably knows something about this, and Tony probably would too. A year ago, Washington County requested a recordable disclaimer of interest on the Manganese Road, which seems like a really intelligent way to resolve these road issues. And I know it's a whole different line of attack than the court cases, but are we doing anything in relation to these roads asking for a recordable disclaimer of interest by any chance?
No, we haven't yet, but we're hopeful that the objective of that Washington County recordable disclaimer of interest applications, the intent was to send that up as a trial balloon, really, to see if it works. We think it should work. We think that that is one of several different administrative avenues that we should be able to pursue with respect to all of these roads. So, but that application turned out to be a lot more complicated than we thought it was going to be. And the application on the Manganese Road in Washington County, which is a B road, that application was filed over a year ago, and PLM has basically stalled out in terms of its processing of that application. Now, I don't know why, Representative Lyman. I don't know what's going on. But nonetheless, it hasn't moved forward very much. I agree with you that I thought that would be really a viable way of addressing these issues, but it's not working out as well as we thought it would.
Representative Lyman, I've been recused on BLM issues till the beginning of this month, and so I've not followed up on it, but I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, I thought maybe you'd have a little bit of insight as to how that process worked, having been there yourself, but it'd be great to see some of that, some of those other alternative approaches work for us. So, thank you.
Lieutenant Governor, this is Kathleen. We called this meeting with a sense of urgency because we have a mandate to approve that RS-2477 plan and deliver it to the Natural Resources Committee before the end of the month. So we need to take a vote of approval.
Kathleen, can I jump in here? This is Kathy Davis.
Yes.
We have 24 people on the meeting. We probably ought to have the voting members identify themselves and do a vote that way.
I agree.
Okay, Kathleen, do you have a list of all the members of the commission? We could just do a roll call vote.
I sure do. I think you all also got it, but let me see if I can pull it up.
If you're okay to do that and conduct the vote, that would be helpful. I apologize. I'm driving right now, and I'm trying to be safe. And
we do not want you to find it, then. Just sit tight.
Lieutenant Governor Cox, this is Commissioner Adams. I'd be glad to make a motion on that item.
Thank you, Bruce. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it. Phil Lyman.
Thank you, Representative Lyman. All right, and then we will go ahead and take the roll call vote.
Thank you. Lieutenant Governor, Spencer Cox, your vote.
Aye.
Senator Sandel. Senator Sandel. Senator Main, Karen Main. Representative Wyman.
Yes.
Representative Stratton.
Yes.
Representative King.
Yes.
Senator Carter.
Yes.
Steve Moore, from Brooklyn. Commissioner Pollock.
Yes.
Commissioner Summer. Commissioner Pearson.
Yes.
Okay, and Commissioner Adams.
Yes.
Okay, what did you keep track of that vote? That vote count for you?
Yeah, we've got that here. It passes.
Passed by about unanimously, right? I just hope it passed unanimously. So thank you. We'll prepare that and vote on to the committee.
Great, and thank you, Kathleen, for your work. Anything else, Kathleen, on the RS-2477 plan?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, then we will go on to the next item. Commissioner Pollack, the floor is yours.
You know, thank you, Governor. Appreciate that. Kathleen and Tony, we usually, I want to discuss the Western Watershed Project litigation, some issues with that. We usually have an executive session. Do we need to have any concern of that where we're not sure who's on this call? Or are we good to go to talk about it?
We probably ought to make sure that the only people here are the members of the committee, but I know we've got a couple of guests that are here specifically to participate. So, Kathy or Tony, I don't know the legalities of this.
Well, technically, if we're going to be discussing litigation, we should go into executive session, but an executive session would include staff. Who on this call would not be either a member of the CDC nor staff?
Well, Commissioner Bushman.
Yeah, maybe let's do this. Let's go ahead and just make that motion, and then we'll have that people drop off that are not members of the commission or staff.
I would make that motion, Commissioner Leland Pollack. We'll be going to executive session regarding litigation.
Second by Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Bruce. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 And any opposed? Okay, we will rule that the motion passes unanimously with the same votes as the previous motion. And we will now go into executive session.